are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. Broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Welcome, dear listeners, to New Dimensions Radio. Today we journey into the heart of personal spirituality and explore how we can experience the mystical in the most ordinary moments of our lives. So often we search for meaning in the grand and extraordinary, yet there is profound wisdom and connection waiting for us in our daily routines, if only we learn how to look. Joining us today is Mirabai Starr, an acclaimed author, translator of sacred texts, and spiritual teacher whose work bridges the mystical with the everyday. Her book, Ordinary Mysticism, invites us to discover the sacred in the ordinary and teaches us how to weave the mystical into the fabric of our daily lives. Mirabai is known for her unique ability to draw from a range of spiritual traditions, offering deep insights that are accessible to each of us and relevant to our modern times. With her warmth and wisdom, she shows us how the mystical can be a living presence in each moment, no matter how small or ordinary it may seem. Join us for the next hour as we delve into the possibilities of embracing mysticism in the everyday. I'm your host, Travis Glenn Sabera. Welcome to New Dimensions. And a warm welcome to you, Mirabai.
Thank you, Travis Glenn. So good to be with you. This whole new era of New Dimensions, a program I've been following for decades and have been on at least four times, I think.
It's fantastic. We are so glad to have you back. We've been very excited behind the scenes getting ready.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm really loving the theme of ordinary mysticism. And before we get into some of the details and the stories contained in that book, I'm wondering if you can recall an early moment in your childhood when you perhaps didn't call yourself a mystic, but at a young age, you were in touch already with the ordinary mysticism.
I think every child is a mystic. You know, we have, when we're children, we have access to the numinous and it's just normal. Maybe that's what this book is about. The numinous is normal, is really what I'm going to say. But I think maybe reading and singing, and I didn't want to start off on a downer note. For me, it's not, but death. Yeah. I experienced death at a very young age, and it was like whatever veils there were between me and the world beyond what we could see, just came off, you know. They were thin to begin with. And I felt like I was granted access to the other world.
What a beautiful range then you've just brought up from the creativity of music into the cracking open, as it were, of a significant loss.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, were these thoughts you were having on your own or experiences, or did you have someone guiding you and pointing things out with you at this time?
No, I wouldn't call them atheists, my parents, but close enough, and my grandparents as well. So my family was Jewish, but completely non-religious. in fact, anti-religious. And so God was not a word, a household word in our home. And belief in life beyond death even was really not part of the fabric of my family consciousness or culture. And yet my parents did have big hearts, and they were activists, and they cared deeply about the world and the war. You know, it was the Vietnam War era. And so for me, that was the spiritual tone in our family was one of peace and justice, which is a spiritual way, you know.
That's right.
Path. And so it wasn't devoid of anything. It was, it just didn't get, it wasn't couched in God language. So yes, I was on my own. I had nobody guiding me through what was always an intensely rich inner life. In fact, if anything, I was often accused of being sensitive and dramatic.
Mm. It sounds like there was that scaffolding then of your access to the numinous, but then also your parents' insistence, perhaps, about this world and what's going on in this world. So the ordinary part.
Yes, Travis Glenn, that was so insightful, because in many ways, I think at the age of 63, I'm harvesting my family's wisdom and making it my own. It just took me a while. I had to really run into the arms of every spiritual tradition I encountered for decades, maybe as rebellion, I don't know. But now it's coming back around.
That's great. That full circle touches me to hear that. Because as mystical as we are also born into our specific context, our specific family, our specific bodies that are our starting point, I suppose.
Yes.
So what would you, again, in this thread, what would you offer to our listeners right now? Perhaps they know what their life has been. They've been trying to make it in their world, and yet they might have a resonance or a popping of something that, okay, the ordinary I got. And then what's the bridge or the practice into noticing the mystical?
Yeah, it's sometimes it even requires distancing ourselves from religion and religiosity and church and belief systems. Sometimes those very structures and institutionalized spaces, religious spaces, can be an impediment, even an obstacle to an actual spiritual experience. I'm sorry to say, because I love the world's great wisdom tradition.
Yeah. Well, this is so significant coming from you as an academic and someone grounded also very much in your intellect to, I assume, have deeply explored this and to then know also how it can be the impediment. So that's very meaningful coming from you.
Well, okay, good. And so if that's the case, that sometimes established institutionalized religions and organized spiritual spaces maybe don't always work, and for many of us we're recoiling, in fact, from those kinds of church spaces, then what? Then, you know, it's obvious, so I'm just going to say something that I'm hoping will just ring bells that you already have in your hearts, but maybe it just were quiet for a moment. And that is nature, art, intimate relationships, acts of peace and justice. You know, these are all portals for a direct connection with the sacred. And that's all that it means to be a mystic is to be someone who has an actual lived experience of the sacred, as opposed to an idea about it or some prayer that one says about or to it. You know, a mystical experience is something we have actually lots of, most of us, on even a daily basis, if we breathe into it and realize that that's what's going on, that are those moments when our hearts are open enough that there's no obstacle, there's no separation really between us and the unity of all that is. But that sounds so grandiose, and it's not. It's very simple. It's our birthright. It can happen while stirring the soup or taking a walk after dinner or kissing a child's forehead so many places.
What I love about the book are all the different stories of the people alive today and the historical figures. And I think, remind me again, there was a saint or someone who had their epiphany while washing dishes.
Yeah, probably several of them. I mean, Teresa of Avila, who, including people who are listening right now, are saints who have had epiphanies while washing dishes. Matt, I hope you have one by tomorrow afternoon. You're either thinking of Teresa of Avila, who said, God lives among the pots and pans, one of her famous sayings, but you're probably speaking about Brother Lawrence, who was a French Carmelite monk, 18th century, and he was assigned to the monastery kitchen as his monastic duty, and he did not like it at all. He wasn't a cook. There was nothing about that duty that he liked. He much rather would have been doing something else. And actually, I think making shoes. He was a shoemaker. So he suffered. He suffered, and he also had a war injury in his hip, so he had a lot of pain. So standing on his feet and washing big pots in the monastery kitchen was a drag. But there was something about the simplicity of life in the monastery kitchen, of cooking and cleaning and serving the other brothers, that he was able to turn into prayer. You know, it's like in Hinduism, the idea of karma yoga, that you do what you do and you make it an offering to the divine. And Brother Lawrence instinctively, fell through the layers of resistance, dropped down through the layers of resistance, let's say, and arrived at a place of peace where he could do what he did, like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, do what you do, but dedicate the fruits to me. Mm. And he found a way to do that and to be in conversation with God as an intimate friend while doing all the normal, ordinary, everyday things. So he's a big inspiration for me in this book.
I'm inspired right now just hearing it. And I like you kind of gave the an intersection of spirit and psychology now by talking about resistance, right? It wasn't just this magical devotion of service, I'm going to wash the dishes, but perhaps he had resistance to this. So the intention, of devotion or service.
Yes, and just being with the resistance, not trying to push it away.
Okay.
And then it eventually kind of opens.
I think that's something we wonder about, is if we're seeking a mystical path, or even not a path, but a moment, this resistance or the I'm not getting it factor or what's being talked about. So what do you recommend if we're experiencing that?
So much of that feeling of I'm not spiritual enough comes from the patriarchy, may I say so?
Absolutely.
It's just not your fault, dude. Any of you who are listening, we have been conditioned to believe that being spiritual is supposed to look a certain way. Pure, perfect, serene, transcendent. And this book and I hope my teachings are so much teachings. That makes me sound way more exalted than I mean. Grandiose is so much about banishing, dispensing with those preconditioned notions of what it means to be spiritual and recognizing the holiness of your messy, everyday, imperfect, perfect life.
Fantastic. Such almost like permission that we don't need from you even necessarily, but we're giving to ourselves as well. But even knowing that exists is so important to hear that.
Yeah.
Thank you for that reminder. I'm speaking with Mirabai Starr, author of Ordinary Mysticism. If you want to learn more about her work, please visit mirabaistarr.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Sabera. You're listening to New Dimensions. Thank you. talking today with Mirabai Starr about ordinary mysticism. And we're looking actually at what perhaps the patriarchy has taught us about what a spiritual or mystical experience should be. And I'm intrigued by this also because there's a chapter in the book called Transmission at the Feet of the Masters. And so I'm wondering what the appropriate relationship to those who've walked us before us might be versus the individuated self of allowing our own experience to be true.
Yes. And the mystical path, Travis Glenn and you know, friends, is for me characterized by paradox. So multiple things get to be true at the same time that might seem to be contradictory, but the mystical heart is big enough to hold these seemingly differing viewpoints that both carry that spiritual truth, I think, that our souls hunger for. One of them being that, yes, it's up to you, as the Buddha said on his deathbed, cultivate your own liberation with diligence, be lamps unto yourself. And that is true. And my family taught me to think for myself. That, in fact, has been almost a burden at times when I really wish somebody else could do the thinking in this case.
Talk about that. That sounds intriguing. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's that many religious people who follow a religion, belong to a church or some other spiritual club or organization, give over their minds to the collective or to the guru or to the hierarchy of you know, the church structure, whatever it may be. And so that is easier, right? It's easier to have someone telling you what to believe, even what to feel about God, what to think, what to expect, what how to behave, what to wear, what not to say, all of those things. And I have at times in my life envied people who could give it over like that. I think my parents ruined me at a young age by teaching us all in our family to think critically and also to challenge everything. You know, I've gotten into trouble because I thought that was normal. And sometimes the authority figures that I've challenged haven't really taken it that well. But still, and yet, there is, and I in this chapter you're speaking about called Transmission at the Feet of the Masters, there are beings who have come before us who are absolutely human beings with all their foibles and their desires and their screw ups and their shadow, who nevertheless, sometimes despite their shadows, sometimes through the very opening that their shadow created, offered great treasures to the human family. I'm a translator of the Spanish mystic, actually, not just the Spanish mystics, John of the Cross and Teresa of Avila, San Juan de la Cruz, Santa Teresa de Avila. Those are the New Dimensions interviews I've done. And Julian of Norwich, who is a medieval English mystic. So I translated her from Middle English. And I adore these mystics, these great wisdom beings, written books about St. Francis of Assisi and Hildegard of Bingen. And so all of these beings are deeply dear to me. And I feel that they are buddies, they're intimate friends that I carry with me. They're ancestors who surround me and hold me. So it's not that I am dismissing all the wisdom keepers that came before. What I am doing is trying to braid together our own spiritual sovereignty with the great gift, the bounty that these wisdom keepers brought and still bring, if you believe, as I do in my heart, that they're still available in many ways as living allies.
As living allies, I'm so curious now, intrigued of their historical possibility of contact with other mystic traditions, not only Christianity, but what they're, because they were all in that system and as they cultivated themselves. And I'm wondering if they dialogued with other traditions at that time to
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. Well, John of the Cross and Teresa of Avila were both born into Spain during the time of the Inquisition. So during the very recently post-expulsion Spain.
Okay.
That is when Jews and Muslims were banished from their holy land of Spain. Now, Jews and Muslims had lived in that area for 800 years. In fact, under Islamic rule, Jews, Christians, and Muslims lived together, collaborated on many of the great works of science, philosophy, mathematics, art, architecture, mysticism, for sure, worked together so closely that we don't even know in some ways who contributed what to, say, Kabbalah. You know, it was just a weave of wisdom, at least those monotheistic traditions. So Teresa of Avila, especially, she was born in 1515. Jews were expelled from Spain in 1492, and Muslims as well. And so she was born with the fragrance of the convivencia, which was that time of the interchange between Christianity, Islam, and Judaism in the air still.
Okay.
And in fact, her family was Jewish, but because they had money, they were able to buy noble titles and escape the Inquisition, although everybody knew they were Jewish and they didn't have sangre pura, pure blood. But it was truly dangerous to be Jewish and Muslim in Spain during that time. Mm-hmm. So we don't know. There isn't evidence of the interchange, but it was in them.
I'm hearing this again as you spoke about the paradox of, and holding the paradox of experience. And you started off today saying you didn't want to go into suffering so quickly. But what, as I'm hearing all the expulsions and the tensions and the lived experience, that's certainly alive now too. We're not farther ahead much in some areas. But I'm just wondering what the role, not to romanticize, but what suffering can allow or open for seeing things like this.
Yeah, right. Well, before I answer that directly, I just want to say also that Francis of Assisi did dialogue with the Sultan, with an Islamic leader, and tried to find a peaceful solution to the Crusades. And he went on foot to meet this guy, who was probably a Sufi master. There's a lot of evidence that he was. And they had a powerful heart connection that could have dissolved the whole conflict, except for all the dudes in charge.
Right.
Other plans. And also my namesake Mirabai, also 16th century, but in India, was someone who hung out with Muslims and Buddhists and Sufis and was a space where people of all faith traditions could find sanctuary and a meeting of the heart.
Beautiful.
So some of the mystics that I know and love definitely had an interspiritual message and experience.
I was just going to say, I love hearing about that because I wasn't so familiar with what have been historical interfaith dialogues. And it does seem easy at the personal level for that. But like you said, for those in power, they have other agendas.
Yeah, exactly. They have nothing to do with God. Yeah. I mean, spirit or union or what Julian of Norwich beautifully called oneing.
And yet the violence is justified as something religious.
That's right. You can see why my parents rejected all religions, because they looked through the narrow lens, though, of, you know, religious institutions and the great harm that they have done and continue to do, rather than direct spiritual experience.
And none of that's wrong. I mean, that's also where Christopher Hitchens got stuck, looking at the imperfection and the distortion of institutions.
That's right.
Not the deeper messages of intention and hope.
Yeah. And personal intimacy and the desire to contribute to peace in the world based on a love for God, which so many great activists have led with.
This is a word that you and I love, And yet also it could be one of the arenas or words like washing the dishes that people might have a resistance to it.
Yeah. Washing the dishes or using the word love. I wouldn't blame you. It can be so fluffy and meaningless. And, you know, what I think I try to say in all my books is that the path of love is anything but fluffy. It's a rigorous, demanding way, because it requires that we intentionally disarm our hearts, that we purposely drop what we think we know and allow ourselves to be tenderly curious about what is, about the other, whoever and whatever the other, what feels like other might be. And so it's a powerful path, and it's not for the faint of heart. Let's put it that way.
Wow. It sounds almost challenging.
Yeah, I hope so.
And also in the way you just described it, it can apply to our relationship with anything that we take outside ourselves. This microphone, the street work happening outside, what's going on in the news. So it's not that the outer events aren't here and the people in our world aren't here. What we're looking at is our relationship to them and how we are relating to them, like you said, with curiosity.
And with, you know, if to be a mystic is to have a direct experience of the divine or of the sacred, then what that means is that the illusion of separation softens, maybe even dissolves in a mystical moment, that we forget that we're separate. And my lifelong teacher and friend, Ram Dass, toward the end of his life, really the whole last decade or more of his life, when he had had a stroke and he was kind of stuck in that broken body, and he had a lot of suffering. We'll come back to the suffering maybe in the next segment, because I deferred and I didn't mean
sure.
to. Ram Dass talked about loving everything, and he would say, you know, you'd be sitting with him in his living room drinking tea, and he'd say, "I love you. And just as much, I love the hat you're wearing. And I love this rug. And I love this mug of tea. And I love that view outside my window of those flowers." And, you know, he kept it really simple, but that's all he needed to say. And I understood that's what a mystic is. The dissolution of the separate self. You love everything.
It's so beautiful. It's like we think of the sacred and the secular, but it almost dissolves the secular. Right. And it is all sacred.
Yes, that's it. I aspire to this. I haven't arrived. Let's get that clear.
I'm speaking with Mirabai Starr, author of Ordinary Mysticism. If you want to learn more about her work, go to mirabaistarr.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website. NewDimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Sabera. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store